Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting edition slash episode slash chronicle of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live, internationally syndicated on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and also rebroadcasts for those of you in Hamilton on Rush 87.7 in Hamilton, and in the Southland area we have the iFinity FM network at iFinityFM.co.nz. Thank you all very much for listening. Today we have, I guess I've been in this movement for a number of years, but this man, out of all the hundreds, if not thousands of people that I've spoken to, both on air and off, be they listeners or guests, is by far one of my favourites. His name's Max Egan, and he's so gargantuan in Australia and now throughout the world because of his unique perspective on things and how he allows people to come to their own conclusions and develop their own understandings about the nature of reality itself, which is very rarely questioned in any classroom you'd ever see. Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on, Vinny, and thank you for such a wonderful introduction. That's very kind of you to say those wonderful things. It's an honour that you would think those things, and it's an honour to be on your show, brother.
Well, we have only 2 hours, and it'll go by fairly quick. The reason why we brought you on today, Max, is to elucidate on your recent world tour where you've gone to Palestine and the UK, and surely goodness knows there are other things. I haven't been keeping that much abreast in front of it, and I'm just curious to get a bit of a catch-up, bro.
Well, yeah, it was a it was a very interesting trip. Started off in Peru, went from Peru up to Costa Rica. From Costa Rica went over to Spain and down to Portugal. Spent a few days in an intentional community in southern Portugal called Temera, and went from there basically to Slovenia and spoke at the World Hemp Congress, the first ever World Hemp Congress, which was pretty amazing that a government would even have such a thing. That was kind of interesting. I went from there to England, did a lot of stuff there, was staying with Ken O'Keefe, who I'm sure many people know of. Ken O'Keefe was on the Mavi Marmara. He was part of the Iraqi Shield operation, the Human Shield operation that happened in Iraq when Bush invaded Iraq. Spent a bit of time with him, went over to Ireland, went and saw Dave Icke while I was over there. It was all quite good. Caught up with Rick Simpson in Slovenia at the World Hemp Congress as well. Actually went and stayed with Rick in Croatia for a couple of weeks after the whole thing was done, just before I came home. But while I was in England, staying with Ken, we went to Gaza, which was really the highlight of the trip for me. I mean, the whole thing was amazing, but going to Gaza was almost surreal to be in this place that, I mean, ever since I was a kid on TV, I've heard about the Gaza Strip. It's always been in the news. It's like this place where terrorists live and terrible things happen, you know, the Gaza Strip.
Is it anything like the Las Vegas Strip?
No, very, very different to the Las Vegas Strip, my brother. But it was amazing. It was surreal being there. And I just kind of, Ken and I did it off the cuff, you know. We thought, you know, we were pretty bold, really, and we kind of snuck in there and kind of got escorted out in a nice way. They were very kind to us, but they did kind of make sure that we left when we said we were leaving and that all this sort of stuff was taken care of. We got detained at the border on the way out by Hamas and all that sort of stuff. They were very nice to us. They were very kind, considering we had kind of snuck into their country. But we did a lot of good stuff while we were in there. We built a schoolroom for some children while we were in there. We went and did some radio spots. We did a spot on Press TV. We spoke at the university. We made a couple of videos and posted them on YouTube, so we didn't make a secret that we were in there because we figured, well, they probably know we're here anyway. You can't really get Ken O'Keefe into Gaza without people noticing. And so, yeah, we figured we'd better make a video and let them know where we were and let them know that we're here. You know, we kind of did the video on the roof of the building so people could see exactly where we were. And sure enough, they came to see us. They sort of gave us a bit of a slap on the wrist and basically held our passports until the day we left and then gave them back to us and we left. They kind of escorted us out. And it was a good experience. But the feel of the people in Gaza was the important part of the whole thing. I mean, just getting to meet these people and see them on their own level and see what it's like to be living in the Gaza Strip. They were very surprised, actually, that there were no air raids and no rocket attacks. There was actually only one rocket hit while we were there. And this is a thing also that people have to understand what goes on over there as far as breaking the ceasefire and things go. You've got to understand that Israel shoots rockets into Gaza all the time. They shoot fishermen all the time. Israel breaks the ceasefire all the time. Anyone gets close to the buffer zone, which is Palestinian land, you know, they walk. If they get close to the fence, they get shot. But while they're still in Palestinian land, so it isn't like when Hamas starts shooting a few pipes over the fence that they've broken the ceasefire, because Israel breaks it all the time. We were there and we heard a rocket hit in the northern suburbs of Gaza while we were there. About three people died, I think, that morning. And there was no response to that. You know, Palestine didn't respond. While we were there, one morning I got woken up to the sound of machine gun fire, and it was Israeli gunboats out on the in the ocean shooting at the fishermen. And they shot two brothers that morning. One of them died. And they shot another guy a couple of days later out there. And these are guys that are fishing within the 3 nautical mile zone. So, you know, this ceasefire gets broken all the time. So that was the reality of life in Gaza. And children everywhere. So many children. There's the place is full of children. Over half the population is children. That's the thing, you know, they're attacking this population. They're raining bombs down on these people. But there's 1.6 million people in the Gaza Strip, and over 800,000 of them are children. And of the adults, half of them are women. So there's around about 1.2 million women and children out of the population of 1.6 million. And they drop bombs on this, and they go to battle against this, and they call it a war. You've got the most powerful military nation on earth, Israel, battling against this population mainly of women and children who have no navy, no army, no air force, no ordnance, no artillery, no tanks, no jeeps, no RVs, no nothing. Nothing. They got handmade fertilizer-powered rockets that don't explode when they hit the ground. It just lumps a pipe that comes smashing through your roof, you know. You know, it's ridiculous to be able to battle against these people and have the nerve to call it a war. It's not a war. It's a genocide against a prison population, a besieged population, an impoverished population consisting mainly of women and children. And the people that I met there were beautiful. They were some of the nicest and most kindest and beautiful, most friendly people I'd ever met. Any person you stopped to, you could go to a store to buy a tool or a piece of wood or a desk or a newspaper, anything. As soon as you start stopping and talking to the shopkeeper, as soon as you start having a bit of a conversation with him, they go and get a tray of tea and they want to sit down, they get a couple of chairs, they want to sit down and have tea with you, maybe get some falafel and have a big social gathering, get all their friends and talk to you. Everybody's so friendly and so hospitable and so willing to talk to you about any issue, and they're very, very informed on everything, you know.
That's what I've found when Westerners go to Gaza in particular. They love them because they hope in some way, shape or form that Westerner will be able to get it out to the Western media what's happening there.
Well, that's what I tried to do. I actually released a film 10 days ago, a short 15-minute film called 10 Days in Gaza. Max Egan and Ken O'Keefe, 10 Days in Gaza. And what I did in that was just try to show the real side of the people there. Now, I interviewed some university students, and they're all saying, look, I'm learning English because it's a global language, and that way when I talk, everyone will understand me, and I'll be able to tell the world that we in Palestine just want to be like everybody else in the world. You know, we're not terrorists. We're real people, and we just want to be like you guys. We just want to be able to be a nation and be accepted and be able to travel. I mean, We're trapped here. You know, that's the thing with the people in Gaza. They have no voice because, oh, they're just terrorists. You can't believe what they say. It's a terror zone. We've had to besiege it because it's full of terrorists. It's not. This is one of the last places of Palestine that's left. And you know how the story goes. I mean, you look at what Israel's done to take all of the country and turn the whole of the country into Israel. I mean, even if you look at the 1948 petition, the UN petition, when they divided Palestine, they made basically most of it Israel, but they left large areas there in the west and in the east for Palestine, all along Gaza and all through the West Bank and up the north. That was all there for the Palestinian people. And since then, Israel has taken it all. There's virtually none of Palestine left. And anybody who stands up against their continual theft of land, they call it terrorist. You know, it's a complete scam. But what you're seeing with the Palestinian people is a dispossessed race of people. These are surplus human beings that are being warehoused. And Israel is presenting a working model to the world how you can warehouse surplus human beings. And as if this is just the norm, this is just the way it should be. This is just the way you treat these people. And these are people who don't have a nationality. They can't get a passport because there is no Palestinian nationality. It's the same in Israel. You know, there is no Israeli nationality. Did you know that? There's Israeli citizenship, but there isn't Israeli nationality. So if you're a Palestinian living within Israel, which is a lot of them are, because, I mean, Israel's annexed virtually all of Palestine. So, I mean, all the Palestinians living in East Jerusalem, which is controlled by Israel, these people don't have a nation because they're Israeli citizens, but you can only be of Jewish nationality. There's a law they brought in, the law of return, which states that the nationality of an Israeli is a Jewish nationality. And if you're of Jewish nationality, you have all the rights that you should have as a human being. But if you're not of Jewish nationality, you don't have any rights. You can be an Israeli citizen, but you have no nationality because there is no Israeli nationality. Even the Supreme Court doesn't recognize an Israeli nationality because if they did, there would be no Jewish supremacism system. It wouldn't function. It couldn't function if there was an Israeli nationality. So that's how they've done it.
I want to know, this is funny. I mean, when they say Jewish nationality, are they talking about you have to be descended from one of the tribes, or do you just have to be a practicing Jew, you know, going to the synagogue, celebrating Yom Kippur, what have you, and is that it, or...?
No, it's the way Israel's got it set up. It's nothing to do with Jews everywhere or anything like that. It's the law of return that's been brought in Israel. If you return to Israel, because they're calling all Jews back to Israel, right? So if you, as a Jew, return to Israel and you gain Israeli citizenship, you have the Jewish nationality. You need Israeli citizenship to have Jewish nationality. You see what I'm saying?
Which means you have to pledge your allegiance to the Zionist regime in Israel in order to have a Jewish identity from regime.
Not really. I mean, if you're a Jew, doesn't matter where you are in the world, you go and you return to Israel, there's a law of return. As soon as you return, you've got full rights, full political rights as a Jew. As soon as you return to Israel, the day you return and become a Jewish citizen, you've got full, an Israeli citizen, you've got full nationality rights as a Jewish nationality. But that means if you're a Palestinian living within that...
What does that grant you?
Normal rights that you have as a normal human being. Oh. Normal rights, normal grants to a legal system, the rights that we enjoy as free democratic societies, right? But if you're an Israeli,
which people could have anywhere else.
Exactly. But if you are a Palestinian living within Israel, right, you can't be of Jewish nationality because you're a Palestinian, so therefore you have no rights. Mm-hmm. You're only an Israeli citizen, but citizens don't get rights. Only nationals get rights. You see, this is the law of return. This is an apartheid law that's been brought in. This has been institutionalized. This has been legalized by this law to purposely make Palestinians living within this territory second-class citizens.
Legally second-class citizens.
Absolutely. And see, a lot of people, Israelis and Jews and stuff, they don't have no idea that this is in place. So you can't really be down on the population. They just think, oh, these Palestinians, they just complain all the time. But they don't realize that the Palestinians have no rights that you would grant normal human beings, not under the Israeli system, because of the two distinctions between Israeli citizenship and Jewish nationality that goes with Israeli citizenship. You see what I'm saying?
I always thought one of the benefits of being an Israeli citizen is having access to cheap surplus white phosphorus.
Well, there's that. But you've got to understand, I mean, this is a trick that's been played against the Jewish people as well, because they don't understand why there's this whole thing going on with the Palestinians, why they can't just be at peace, right? They don't understand what the Palestinians have to go through every day just to live in this area, which used to be their country. I mean, it was their country 100 years ago. In 1948, they still had half of it. And now the pockets that are left are totally either under siege, as in the Gaza Strip, or utterly controlled by Israelis, as in the West Bank. In the West Bank, which is an area the size of, say, Sydney Western Suburbs, you've got 500 Israeli checkpoints. You know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. So you can't do anything in the West Bank. And not only that, terrible. You don't have the normal rights of a national, because you're not a Jewish national. You're only an Israeli citizen. You know,
it's like being in a perpetual line for an amusement park, but without the amusement. That's Gaza for you, ladies and gentlemen. Take a ride. We'll be right back after the break with Max Egan from thecrowhouse.com. You can listen in live in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and there's also iPhone and Android apps downloadable from AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Get the word out, and we'll be right back after these messages.